Today on Secular, Washington Post owner Jeff Bezos claims, quote, the stakes are too high, and it's why the newspaper endorsed no one.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Secular. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Secular.
All right, folks, if you're watching or listening to this broadcast, you don't want to turn away. So find a place, at least be able to join us this next 28 and a half minutes or so, definitely, if you can't make it all the way through the full hour of the broadcast. That's because in just a few minutes in the next segment, Tulsi Gabbard is going to be joining us. You know she has had an increased role in the campaign and getting out the vote for President Trump and other candidates across the country. We also have, of course, joining us in studio. Yesterday, Senator Marsha Blackburn joined us by Zoom, and that was awesome. And today, Senator Bill Hagerty of Tennessee, former Trump ambassador to Japan. He was also, when he ran for Senate, endorsed by President Trump. So someone, again, who's still very close to the president and now in the U.S. Senate, working on these, is able to really, I think, will be able to answer some cool questions because of getting Washington working, because he comes from a corporate world where you don't make anything if you can't keep your costs low and your production high and high quality. And so these kind of issues, tariffs, all of that, we'll be able to get into. In fact, we won't take live calls right then, but you can call us 1-800-684-3110 because we'll open the lines up. But if you do have questions, put them in the chat. If you got YouTube and you're watching it, or places like Facebook or Rumble, for instance, check those out, because I think that would be, again, a way we could pull some questions for Senator Hagerty. So do that right now. We are also, on this election day, just being 1 week away, and the left, we know, will do anything to undermine the integrity of this election. You know, breaking late last week, there was a federal judge that granted the Biden-Harris DOJ's attempt to allow non-citizens to illegally vote. Today, the ACLJ is filing at the U.S. Supreme Court to defend the integrity of this election. A Supreme Court fight of this magnitude, just days before the most critical election in a generation, at least, if not in modern history, that this, again, requires immense resources. So imagine you're preparing for a Supreme Court case at not just double speed. This is not even close to that. This is like 50 times the speed or more. Maybe it may be almost 90 times the speed, because usually your case is granted and then they hear it like 6 months later. So think about that in the time frame. But remember, the Chief Justice asked for information by 3 p.m. today from the campaign to make sure, or tomorrow, to make sure the challengers to Virginia, what their position was. So we're going to be in there as well. And Will, I think this is just a perfect example of how hard we're fighting for folks during this election cycle. While votes are going on with early voting, if you could see, I voted early today after dropping off my youngest daughter to school at a high school across the street. It took about 5 minutes because, again, I was able to weave in a time. Weave, the most popular word lately.
Right.
Thank you, Joe Rogan and President Trump. But I think, Will, it's just a moment here. I think, we've shown the ability for us to really be in conversation, discussion, even friendly with some of the top U.S. senators in the country. And I want people to see that, to know that their dollars and cents go to that as well in building those relationships. But we've got to have the resources to fight these fights.
That's right, Jordan. And as you saw in our title, that the owner of the Washington Post, Jeff Bezos, is saying that the stakes are too high in this election. That's why they didn't endorse. We're going to talk about that more with Tulsi in the next segment, because he got some interesting reasons why he thought that the paper shouldn't make an endorsement, mainly that the media has fallen below Congress in the public's trust. But here at the ACLJ, we work every day. We bring you news backed up by facts and analysis by experts in the field. And that's also another angle that takes your resources to keep the ACLJ to keep moving forward. I have a feeling, Jordan, ACLJ has a higher trust rating than the Washington Post.
Oh, absolutely. You know why? Because when we take your case and we go to court, we don't get tossed out of court. The court might not always agree with us, but they take all of our cases seriously when we represent you or the government or states or municipalities. Donate today. Calls in at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Can you believe it? We are just a week away from Election Day. We're also, folks, a week away from hopefully a week, maybe in a day, depending on these slowdowns in Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, Michigan. We'll talk about that later in the broadcast as well. From, again, determining who the next president of the United States will be. And I want to tie that right in because a great friend of ours, of course, a member of the Seculo team here, a former Democratic congresswoman and presidential candidate, Tulsi Gabbard. And Tulsi, now a Republican, you're campaigning all across the country. And I wanted to go to this question because it tied into kind of the media and why we play the role that we do, is, which is we tell the truth. If things are tough and it's going to be a hard battle, we don't put rose-colored glasses on. If we think it's a slam dunk, we'll call it a slam dunk too. We're not afraid to do that. But the idea here, Tulsi, that Amazon Washington Post, as I like to call it, has decided to endorse no one, to me, that's very unique in the sense that Jeff Bezos and these other billionaires have tried to buy newspapers to influence, realize they are losing influence because of their bias, or at least perceived bias.
Yeah, it's exactly. I mean, it's a very transparent exposure of what their real motives are. It really is interesting when we see how many people in the mainstream media are so freaked out by Jeff Bezos' decision to not have the Washington Post endorse any presidential candidate. I think his op-ed was very well written and was very crystal clear. I think a lot of these other legacy media organizations should kind of take a page out of his book and recognize what he pointed out, which is the American people trust the mainstream media less than they do Congress, and Congress is always at the bottom of that list. Yeah. And so they should really look in the mirror and ask themselves, why is that? Why is it that the American people trust Joe Rogan way more than they trust any of these mainstream propaganda media sources? Is because they are biased. Yeah. And they are spreading propaganda. And as much as people like to say, oh, well, you know, nobody cares who these papers endorse, I don't really believe that. I was kind of surprised. I was sitting at the airport the other day. Don't ask me which airport, but I was sitting next to a guy who had the New York Times, like the actual newspaper, open, and he was reading it page by page, like we used to do when we were kids. We need to be able to trust these organizations, not to favor one candidate over the other. And in the case of the New York Times and many others, that's just not the case.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, if you did fair comparisons and you know, policies, and there's some policies they might like from Harris, but there might be a few policies they actually do like from President Trump. But right now, I'd feel like, Tulsi, those would not get printed in most of these newspapers, because anything that shows that Donald Trump could somehow have better ideas than a Democrat, and I'm trying to look at other ways they're going to try to spin this. For instance, you know, I was thinking, Tulsi, if they had just polled their subscribers, they'd probably have such bad numbers of, you know, 80-20 or 70-30 favoring Democrats that it may even look worse.
Yeah, exactly. I think they may realize that they are a dying form of media, given their very low subscription rates. I mean, Fox News Digital has much greater reach than any of these other, like, including the New York Times, in being able to get information to people. And I think this is part of the reason why they're freaking out. But, you know, the American people aren't stupid. And I think this is one of the problems that we see from the MSNBCs of the world and the network TV broadcasts and the New York Times and others, is they really think the American people are stupid. And they really believe that people who are supporting Donald Trump are either stupid, or in the words of Hillary Clinton and others, that they are deplorables or fascists or Nazis or whatever. They throw these names out, and it just shows more poorly on themselves than Donald Trump how out of touch with the reality they are.
Well, and Tulsi, you brought up the deplorables from Hillary Clinton. You brought up MSNBC. You basically hit all the points I was going to ask you, is that you were at Madison Square Garden on Sunday night at that Trump rally, and every single media outlet leading up to it, almost, I will give maybe, except for a few, we're showing the imagery from the 30s and calling not just President Trump the fascist Nazi, but looping in anyone else in that stadium as being a Nazi as well. The imagery was that they showed mostly was of the crowd from 1939 that were doing Hitler salutes. But then they weren't showing you the diversity of the crowd, how many Jewish Americans were in the crowd holding up the Israeli flag. Not something you would traditionally see at a Nazi rally if they were being honest with people. But does that just further discredit and honestly show where Jeff Bezos understands that the media is way out of their lane?
Completely. And it just shows that they are intent on pushing a very specific narrative in their hopes to try to sway voters and influence this election. It was really insane to see what MSNBC was airing, and it's just so extreme that I have a hard time believing that any rational, open-minded person would buy into that. But also, I got some text messages after the event from college students and people who just graduated from college who unfortunately did not make it into Madison Square Garden because it was packed. And they were texting me saying, hey, we were partying outside. We were having a great time. This kid happens to be Indian American. He has friends who are like all different races, ethnicities. They were having a blast outside. They were streaming the speeches on their phones and laughing hilariously about the fact that they were all being called neo-Nazis. It was just so absolutely ridiculous. But again, they're selling this because they really think that people are that stupid as to buy into it.
You know, Tulsi, I was going to ask you this too. You've been traveling all across the country. You said, like, don't even ask me where I was last night. Where are you today? And kind of like, what's your schedule? Because I think what I love telling our team is we've got so many folks associated with us in different roles as surrogates out there for President Trump. Just interesting to see in these final week of the campaign where you're going and where you'll be.
Yeah, so we are literally 7 days out from an election night where we hope that, as President Trump says, the results will be too big to rig. But the rigging, the shenanigans, of course, we're paying very, very close attention to what's happening out there as people are casting their ballots. I'm on my way to Wisconsin. I'll be boarding a plane shortly. Bobby Kennedy and I are going to have our final Reclaim America event. We've done them. I think this is number 6 or 7 in the battleground states. We'll be in Madison, Wisconsin, that a lot of people are saying should not even be on the map for President Trump. But this is the second or third event I'll be doing in Madison. Bobby Kennedy and I will be there tonight. And then tomorrow I'll be with J.D. Vance. We're doing a veterans-focused town hall in Pennsylvania in Bedford County. And then I will be, I actually have to step away for a couple of days. I have our Army Reserve duty in Oklahoma at Fort Sill. And then we'll be doing a big event in Georgia. Myself, Danica Patrick, Sage Steele will be out doing an event in Georgia, and on from there, making that last minute pitch.
And Tulsi, I wanted to ask you about those events you had been doing with RFK, and the fact that you're going into Madison twice, which is usually seen as kind of a bastion of liberalism that sometimes even, comes down, makes it difficult for Republicans to even go and speak. But are you getting better feedback because it's you and RFK and those, so from those who may have grown up more on the left-hand side of politics, the left side of politics, and they say, well, if they're willing to do this, I'm willing to at least come and listen.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I was just there a few days ago and we had a beautiful event out on a farm, and I stuck around after just to talk to people who were there. We had great turnout. We had about 500 people out there, and a number of people, I lost track of how many people came up to me and said some version of, I've never been to a political event in my life. I'm so glad I came. Others saying I'm a lifelong Democrat, and this will be the first time I'm voting for a Republican in my life. Different versions of this, and I specifically people saying, Tulsi, I'm here because of you. I'm voting for Donald Trump because of you. I'm voting for Donald Trump because of Bobby. People who have supported us, who trust us, and who are trusting our confidence in President Trump and why we're doing all we can to get him elected, and knowing that this is the best choice in this election for our country. It's very hope inspiring.
Yeah, Tulsi, this is our first day of our matching challenge, which usually starts at the beginning of the month, but we're doing it today because we put together a special election integrity unit. We call it, it's at aclj.org/protect the vote. And we've got people out there, if they donate today and during this first week lead up to the election, we've moved up our matching challenge so that we have all the resources we need leading up to Election Day, because we've already handled some of those, on Election Day, Tulsi, and then after Election Day, if these counties are not finishing their votes and the poll watchers aren't allowed in, all those kind of issues. And so I think for people to hear from you how important it is to have organizations like ours ready to go with the funds necessary to do whatever we need to do.
Please donate. Every single vote must be counted as it's cast in this election. We cannot trust that there aren't those in different states who will try to manipulate the outcome of this election. It's up to us to make sure that that integrity is there. And I want to thank ACLJ for your leadership in making sure that happens. Please donate. Your vote and your donation could make the difference.
All right. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Seculo. I want you to get your calls in, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Senator Hagerty is about to join us right here in our studio live, the senator from Tennessee. We had Senator Blackburn on yesterday, but they've not only been working in Tennessee, of course, but traveling the country, and I know this from Senator Hagerty, to make sure they're getting out the vote, especially the early vote. If you noticed today, I did it this morning. I dropped my oldest daughter off to school because she has the latest start. There was an early vote place just right around the corner, and I said, you know what, let me check the line there. It's most people should be already on their way to work. I'll get there a little later and see what's going on, and walked right in, and I think I had voted by at least 6 minutes. I was out the door at most. So again, this is when early voting, if you really strategically pick out your time, you're not going to be there for 3 hours unless there's some technical issue. And then I would just remind you that you don't usually just have to vote at one place in early voting. Pull up your phone and look at the other locations that are available near you, and you can head there as well. I think also, too, this importance of what the ACLJ is launching, I can't say it enough. So this is the ACLJ.org Protect the Vote Initiative. And this initiative is all about, we can put it up on the screen, guys, so people can see the website, where to go. Because we are launching this the same day as our matching challenge, which is a week earlier. Usually we would start on the first Monday of a month. And this time around, of course, that would be election week. So instead, what we've decided to do is let's make sure, Will, that we have the resources now to fight the battles that have already starting to come in, especially all the calls and questions we'll get on election day. And then if anything doesn't go right, or if states are taking way too long to count the votes, we can then intervene as well. So people need to contact us. If you're in a place like Pennsylvania, if you're in a place like Michigan that has already announced that they won't be able to count the votes, make that note when you submit your form that, you know, I'm concerned not about necessarily voting, but the fact that they're already announcing that it's going to take days in my states. And that makes me kind of feel like if it does, then is my vote going to really be counted, and how many other votes that they're going to be let in? I think all of that, Will, is still on the minds of a lot of Republican voters. But what I think has been great, and we'll talk about with Bill Hagerty too, is that we embraced early voting yet again. It had been probably since 2004, maybe 2006, that Republicans really got behind the idea of early voting. Then it kind of tampered away as we're the Election Day party. And now it's back again, because the numbers that we're seeing are impossible early votes for just Democrats. And it used to be about 30, 70. And I would think right now, in a lot of polls they've taken, it's much closer than that.
That's right, Jordan. You're seeing places like Pennsylvania. You're seeing Nevada. You're seeing lots of other places around the country where that early vote total, and some of those states even report by party registration. Now, you don't know what someone voted for, but a lot of times that's a general indicator of the direction that they voted. And you're seeing just the people registered Republican in places like Pennsylvania, they are far surpassing the early vote totals than Joe Biden won by. That gap between 2020 and 2024 early vote totals from Republicans are surpassing the vote total that Joe Biden won by in 2020. So that would be a positive indicator for the Trump campaign. But also, you're seeing things that the ACLJ is doing right now. filing today in the Supreme Court in support of the position that Virginia is taking, that they should be able to take people that have identified as non-citizens off their voter rolls before an election.
The court has fast-tracked at least till now. So they got the filing from Virginia. They could have dismissed it and said you need to go through the normal process. But instead of doing that yet, and that could still come, they've asked for briefing from the party that wants to keep these voters on the roll, even though they self-identified as not being citizens and thus not eligible to vote in this federal election. So the fact that the Chief Justice ordered that, I think, is the most positive sign you can get in this kind of short-term appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. But on top of that, and I think this is very important also to point out, that's just battle one. There's going to be more of these leading right up until Election Day. And then on Election Day, there's going to be a lot of people who think, you know what, these lines don't make sense. I don't feel like necessarily I was being treated equally, or I had trouble being able to vote, and I've never had that trouble in my life. That's when you contact ACLJ.org. And then let's put up the full thing again so people know where to go. So it's defend election integrity at ACLJ.org/protect the vote. And the key here is that we want every vote counted. But we want to make sure it's not just Democrat votes counted, all of them, all of our votes, third party votes, independent voters, smaller campaigns, candidates, votes, your local races that may be on there, and constitutional amendments. We've got to get you excited, and I think you are, but we have got to have the resources to fight here at the ACLJ, because these battles only come around really once every 4 years, sometimes in a midterm, but usually not. So what do we need from you? We need you to make a donation today at ACLJ.org. We've started our matching challenge early. And that donation, so if you donate $100 to the ACLJ right now, will be doubled. So it's the equivalent of giving $200 to the ACLJ. And when I look at this, Will, and I say, you know, this is why I want to tell people, we decided to do something we never done before, which is launch the match early, because we wanted to have a period of time in that match to fill the coffers for Election Day activities and post-Election Day activities.
That's right. And as you mentioned, we've already started our Virginia push at the Supreme Court, when we go through all the things that are necessary there by filing a brief and hoping that the court takes it up. But we're also looking at other issues. There was that issue that we looked at in Pennsylvania that we talked about right at the end of that broadcast. Our legal team is looking at where the election board, a county election board, said, hey, it looks like 2,500 ballot applications, because the ballot application there actually goes pretty late in Pennsylvania, were dropped off, and we have concerns. This is the election board saying it, that these are fraudulent applications. So these are issues that ACLJ is looking at, we are on top of, and we are going to continue to move forward with these issues as they rise up. But there's also a way, if you're seeing that, you can go to ACLJ.org/election hotline. That's another website we have that if you specifically have an issue, if you want to give during this drive where we have 1 week and we're trying to fill that that goal of getting donations doubled, but you can also go to ACLJ.org/election hotline.
For people to go, is that going to be quicker?
That is if you have an issue. If you have an issue or you want to know your rights as you go into the polling place, okay. ACLJ.org/election hotline has resources for you and a way to contact us if you're seeing an issue. But if you are feeling good about where you're at, or you've already voted and you want to contribute to the ACLJ, ACLJ.org/protect the vote. That is the place you can go right now and participate in this match.
Yeah, and we really need you to do so. It's not that we don't have the staff. We have them. It's not that we don't have the national reach to be anywhere we need to be. We've got that. But we've got to have the resources to say, well, if it's 6 or 7 states that are still not finishing their vote count, there's a problem there. We need to, the government needs to go in, Secretary of State's office needs to go in and figure out why is this happening when we are using electric machines and again computers. Why is this so difficult to vote with tabulation and issues like that? Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. Senator Hagerty should be in the studio with us in the next segment. I understand I've been caught in some Nashville traffic before in my life. A day or two, as the team here can definitely attest to. Support the work of the ACLJ during this matching challenge. Double the impact of your donation at ACLJ.org. So we've got the resources to fight for election integrity. We're already filing at the U.S. Supreme Court today.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, welcome back to Seculo. We are going to take your calls to 1-800-684-3110. And let's take one of those now, Will, and go to Ronald in South Carolina. Hey, Ronald.
Yeah, we have Ronald on line two. You're on Seculo.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I just early voted, and it's interesting here, when I put out the sample ballot, they're actually, in my state of South Carolina, they're actually going to make an amendment, a statewide constitutional amendment to our Section 4, Article 2 for relating to voter qualifications. And it's going to read, or should read, that it must be a citizen of the United States and of this state of the age of 18 and above, who is properly registered, is entitled to vote as provided by law. And yeah, they,
I think they're just trying to, Roger, you know, Ronald, what they're doing is trying to create clarity. And we've got Senator Hagerty of Tennessee. Senator Hagerty, I remember back when we were looking at this issue after the last election, and your general counsel contacted us and said, you know, we want to do like a review kind of where these voting laws are. How did it get so loosey-goosey with these secretaries of states? And what we found was that in a majority of states, secretaries of states have this one-line provision that allows them to basically do whatever they think is best to get out the vote with if there's some kind of emergency, which you can understand, you know, that's a pretty broad term. But with that kind of power, we then had to decide, you know what, it's time for the Republican Party to double down on early voting. And it's a message I've been hearing from you leading up to this final week before the election. And I know you really went all in on that issue. And just explain to people, they've still got time, that here's Senator Hagerty telling you why it's a good idea to vote early.
Well, listen, we saw it happen in 2022, like 2020. The Secretary of State, a lot of actors that were acting well beyond their constitutional authorities, engaged in changing the rules in the middle of the game back in 2020. There's a lot of angst and upset about that, and rightfully so. But what we found is there's no court in the nation that's going to come back and undo the results of an election after the fact.
Yeah, very different.
So we got to deal with it on the front end. In 2022, many of those changes have been legislated. And what I saw in case after case, I was very optimistic. I was out campaigning in seven states with my hopefully future colleagues. And I thought three or four of those candidates would win and wind up serving with me in the Senate. In fact, only one of them won. That was Ted Budd in North Carolina. And everybody else lost, even though we were up in the polls, you know, a day or two before Election Day. And when we went back and analyzed what happened in each state, Jordan, what we realized is that we got beaten on the ground. Democrats had put a machine in place. They changed the rules. I mean, Pennsylvania, great case in point. I've been spending so much time in Pennsylvania. I just got back last night, actually, from there. Great case in point. They moved to 50 days of early voting. They mailed ballots out to everybody.
Yeah.
And, you know, they created a situation where John Fetterman, who could not even speak at that point in time, wound up with a greater than 700,000 vote margin the day of his debate with Dr. Oz.
Yeah. I mean, it was out of control, but we knew that we had to do something where we could get our folks out to kind of not just square off the game, but now we're starting to see polls. I love this exit poll showing that early voting in a lot of the most tough battleground states is very close if they track Republican, Democrat. And if not, just the numbers alone are very high. Well, which means that they're not all Democrats in those votes.
I'm very optimistic about the early voting numbers that we're seeing. In Pennsylvania, we have dramatically decreased the edge that Democrats had. We're not going to be able to close that, but we're going to be able to show up on Election Day with a much more achievable goal. Dr. Oz won on Election Day in Pennsylvania by 400,000 votes last time, but Fetterman, again, already had over 700,000 vote margin going into it. So I think we've got a real chance to turn things around in the states that we're coming in, and I'm seeing very encouraging news on these early
calls. 1-800-684-3110. Senator Bill Hagerty is joining us. We'll have a little bit more time to talk in the next segment of the broadcast, go through some issues as well, so you don't want to miss that. Share it with your friends and family wherever you're watching the broadcast. And if you're listening to the broadcast right now, don't tune away. Don't shut it off. Wait just a couple minutes, and we will be back with more from Senator Hagerty. Support the work of the ACLJ. We've launched our matching challenge, which is usually at the beginning of a month, today on defending election integrity. And we want you, if you've got a problem, to go to aclj.org. With Senator Bill Hagerty of Tennessee, a great friend of ours here at the ACLJ. And of course, we're located in one of our offices here, the big production office right here in Tennessee. And Senator Hagerty, one thing we've talked about too is this idea. I mean, you were running us through all the stuff you're doing. You're in Pennsylvania. You were at the Trump rally in New York City. And there's sometimes this idea about you that, you know, some kind of moderate Republican. I think you probably were MAGA before most people in the United States even knew what that was.
I tell you, if you grew up in a small town like I did, and you've witnessed and felt the condescension from, you know, the Northeast liberal establishment, the media, I think we're all sick and tired of being deemed a flyover state. Yeah. Something I understand very well. I think, you know, the fact is I've been fortunate to be able to do business and you know, have a successful career that's taken me all over the world.
Right.
But I never forgot my roots, and I totally appreciate everything and every sentiment that people are feeling here in America right now. The forgotten men and women of America have a voice right now in Donald Trump. And to be able to serve in his administration as I did last time was a great honor. To see him coming back with such strength right now is exciting. And I think I certainly feel the excitement myself when I'm out on the trail in these battleground states. Our population is moving with us, even in Tennessee, Jordan. Our early voting enthusiasm is way up.
Yep.
And what we're seeing is in those counties that are strongholds for Republican, you know, voters, everybody is stepping up. Our numbers are like they've never been before in terms of the enthusiasm.
And that's amazing. And I think, too, something to point out is because it's very important that we're focused on President Trump, that we take back control of the U.S. Senate, because that's the only way we get through good nominees. It's the way we get legislation to the desk of the president ultimately, and it's the toughest one to get things through. So having even a Republican majority of any size is so important if you're a Trump supporter, because to get things done is going to take that Senate.
Well, I think that if we allow Chuck Schumer to retain the gavel, Schumer will do everything he can to block President Trump and his agenda. We can't let that happen. And I feel very good that we will not let that happen, that we'll see the gavel come back to Republican hands. The question is, what will our margin be? I'd rather it be 53, 54, 55 Republican senators as opposed to just 51. And I feel like we can do that if the opportunity were ever there. It's present right now. We just need our Republican voters to get out and vote early. De-risk this thing. Get your voice known. You know what you're going to do on Election Day. Go ahead and do it now. Take the risk out of the equation.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I always say, too. I got three kids, parents, and everything else. So, you know, I don't know what the weather's going to be next week. I don't know what's going to be happening with the kids. But I knew today, after I dropped my daughter off youngest at preschool, I could run over, at least check to see if this was a good time to go for me. And it was, and it worked. And we made it all here on time. So, I mean, it's important. Again, this was my day to go do that. And then I had a backup day on Thursday, just in case, where I would have amount of time as long as I needed. But let's get past just voting, because you've also talked about how Democrats have gotten so desperate in these final weeks of the campaign. Now we're being, you know, President Trump is Hitler, or he's a fascist, or he's a dictator and an enemy of democracy. And I think Kamala Harris said a dangerous, not just to America, but the world.
It's amazing what they resort to. Last week on CNN, I was defending President Trump based on some remarks that supposedly that General Kelly is representing President Trump made, you know, a number of years ago. I followed up with the people that were there. There's no truth to it. But the Democrats and their partisan media allies are more than willing to just attack us. The first question to me was, did I think Hitler done anything good? I mean, it's just shocking.
This is on CNN, and it's like in 2024, you're asking a U.S. senator, but there's things that Hitler did good. I mean, it's not even just ridiculous, but it's also like, so it's just demeaning almost, the question itself.
It certainly is, but they've tried to pin this on every Republican presidential candidate, you know, going back, you know, over decades. This is their go-to playbook. Is to pull out things like Hitler, Nazi, fascism, racist, whatever. The American public are tired of this. I mean, I think we're way past this right now. The American public knows, 72% of the American public will tell you, this country is on the wrong track. Who was here for that ride? Kamala Harris was the last voice in the room. Whether it's disgracing us in Afghanistan as a nation, destroying our economy, destroying our southern border, creating national security crises, and, you know, crime in our cities is way through the roof. She can't escape that, and President Trump is the one who can fix it.
Yeah. You call her the, quote, avatar of Kamala Harris. Explain that to people, because I think it's actually a pretty good term.
Well, what we saw happen after Joe Biden was kicked to the curb, ruthlessly kicked to the curb, I might add, the media went right to work. She takes no media appointments herself, but they begin to construct a new Kamala Harris for us to digest. And the ramp up between Biden's dropping out of the race and the Democratic convention was something like I've never seen, creating this completely different person than the reality that she has been. Right. In trying to basically make the American public think that somehow Kamala Harris went from being the most radical left-leaning member of the U.S. Senate to being a moderate, it's ridiculous. It's a joke, and the American public is seeing through it now.
Well,
Senator Hagerty, you mentioned the way the media has projected upon the candidate, President Trump and former president, but also it can't be lost that when they make these statements about, say, the Madison Square Garden rally, that they're not just calling him a fascist or Nazi. They are taking the rhetoric of basket of deplorables from Hillary Clinton and throwing gasoline on that and calling 50% of the country effectively a Nazi. Yeah. And you see President Obama out there trying to say, how did we get here? We need to tone down the rhetoric. We're so divisive. But what we're seeing is our own media are the ones that are throwing gasoline on the fire that was started many, many decades ago by liberal policies and liberal politics attacking half of the country. Do you see a way forward out of this as we look into a new era of politics?
Well, the first step in the way forward is to reelect President Trump, to put him back into office. It's to get a majority in the United States Senate and hold it in the House. That's our opportunity to come back and fix the massive set of problems that the American public are dealing with right now to make their lives better yet again. President Trump was able to do that. Real wages were up in his administration. People felt prosperity at every level that they'd not felt before. Now they feel endangered because of crime. They feel threatened because of the fact that they've allowed, you know, could be 12 million, could be 20 million people that have come across this border. We have no idea who is in our country and what sort of security threat they represent, but we know that it's significant. You think about how we've weakened our posture on an international basis after what happened in Afghanistan, the wars that we found ourselves in just because there's a void in American leadership. This all gets fixed the day President Trump comes into office and we provide him with the support on the legislative branch that he needs to get this, get our nation back on track. And as that happens, I think the people that have been so radicalized, to believe this stuff that the media are spouting are going to realize, wait a minute, my life got better again. Mm. That's the way to do it. It's to bring our nation back and demonstrate that we can do it, and the right policies will make that happen. President Trump will deliver those.
And this is kind of a new push by Republicans. But I remember just a couple weeks ago in West Virginia, I was speaking at their Lincoln Day dinner. And every speaker before me, whether they were elected very locally or the statewide level, they all said, Senator Hagerty, one thing we've got to do is turn out the vote big in deep red states. We know we're going to win the Republican votes, but there's an importance to this election, not to actually how to become the president, but how to kind of make it clear to the Washington elite that you are here and that the American people really did want you. That wasn't some 5 or 6 million vote discrepancy. But if it's close, I think that kills that whole notion from the Dems that we need to go to, letting everyone, all these kind of ideas that no more electoral college. And of course, then I think about us in Tennessee and I think, would we get any visits?
Never. Yeah. No, if we do away with the electoral college. And again, you got to go back to the founding of this nation. The only way they were able to bring smaller states into the fold was to agree to allow each state to have a voice. The Democrats, of course, would like to take that away so that five large states can control the outcome of every election. That shouldn't happen here in America. That's a founding premise and a promise that our forefathers made to us as we brought this nation together. I do think, though, that the Democrats have begun to lay the predicate for making the argument that if President Trump doesn't win the popular vote, that he's somehow illegitimate. You saw them take action in Colorado, Massachusetts to take him off the ballot. These are blue states. They just wanted to reduce the absolute number of votes that he has so that can, again, feed this, you know, divisive argument that they're going to come up with, if they can, that somehow President Trump isn't a legitimate winner.
And just quickly, we've got less than 20 seconds here, really. But the idea of you were in Pennsylvania, and I know how key that's always been as someone who's been in the campaign world for a long time. Pennsylvania was always kind of our benchmark for Republicans. Can we play there? Can we keep it close and even potentially win? You were just got back from Pennsylvania. You've been up there a lot. What is it like on the ground? Are you feeling that kind of momentum? Because we have national audience, but they want to know what's happening in swing states.
Well, it's definitely working in our favor. And I'll tell you this, we've got a large number of people working door to door there. The weather has been good in Pennsylvania. That has allowed us to actually get out and canvass, because if you think about where our voters are, they're not in the densely populated urban areas. They're in the more ex-urban and rural areas, but we're able to get to them, and people have enthusiasm like I've never seen before.
Senator Hagerty, thanks for being in here with us and taking that time to actually be in the studio. It's great to have you. It's one of our best senators in the U.S. Senate. Now, let me tell you folks what you can do. We are launching our match early so that we are prepared for any election day or post-election day, or even now if you've got questions on early voting. So you can go to aclj.org/election hotline if you need to contact us and you believe that you need legal assistance, and we will contact you. Support the work of the ACLJ. Double the impact of your donation during our matching challenge at aclj.org. Donate.
Welcome back to Seculo. We thank Senator Hagerty for joining us in studio today. And Jordan will be joining me as soon as he and the senator are done talking right outside the studio. But I have Jeff Balaban here, our director of ACLJ Jerusalem, to talk about some really important and quite frankly frightening things that are happening in the United States right now. And one thing you may not know about Jeff Balaban, we talk about the great work that he does here for the ACLJ. Every day, you see him frequently talking about our work with ACLJ Jerusalem. But Jeff is the former head of communications and spokesperson for CBS News. Jeff knows what the news media looks like from the inside. And I dare say, Jeff, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I feel like we are in a completely different eon from the era of media that you served in when you were former head of communications at CBS, because the way that the media has decided to lean in on this Nazi narrative is so dangerous and scary in the United States, but we've got to speak out against it.
Yeah, let's be clear. This is, it's not news to anybody that mainstream media has a hard left bias, a middle left bias, but certainly a clear left bias. But starting really with Trump's first campaign, there was a decision, and the New York Times wrote about it openly. There was a decision to openly become partisan and to cast off even the appearance of being non-biased, except that it's not successful when you announce, hey, we're Democrats. So they still try to create some illusion of somehow trying to report the news, but it's completely lost. It is a nonstop barrage of political talking points. And unfortunately, as the politics of the left have gotten more and more extreme, and discussions about, you know, covering up what is a lie, what is misinformation, what is disinformation becomes attacks on truth, and words take on new meanings. And it's gone so far that it's not really, listen, in the past, when I was a surrogate for President Trump running for election, I was, you know, referred to as, and well, not just me, but people referred to as Nazis and racists simply for supporting someone who half of America supported. But now they really have taken the gloves off because they're more and more frantic, because they have a candidate that they want to see in office who is so lackluster, and it was just foisted on the Democratic Party and the American people by not going through a process. So they're just trying to terrify people. And the truth is, nothing sells like fear. Nothing motivates voters like fear. And so this notion, using words like Nazi, fascist, even Kamala Harris invoking Hitler when and claiming with no real support for this. I mean, it's based on this very scurrilous Atlantic piece that's unsupported, that claims that President Trump said positive things about Hitler. It's just not true. I mean, there's just no evidence that it's true. There's many sources that it's not true. So yes, they've taken a new role. And what Jeff Bezos has done is acknowledge that the public has lost all faith. The public doesn't like politics and doesn't like politicians, but the public really doesn't like being manipulated anymore. And it's become too transparent.
And when you see, the makeup of the crowd, of which whenever they say Nazi rally, they are including everyone in there. But it is a bizarro world where they are flipping upside down terms, Orwellian definitions of Nazi now, where when you see the support of Jewish Americans in the crowd, as well as Israeli flags being held up in the Madison Square Garden, as well as Jerry Wartsky, the Auschwitz survivor that was in attendance and also put out a video saying how disgusted he was at seeing that language being used by the Democrats. One, that is not a Nazi rally that Adolf Hitler would endorse. And in reality, they are using, once again, they redefine the word freedom. They redefine the word abortion. Now they are redefining the word Nazi to mean the exact opposite, except for just you are supposed to hate this half of the country.
Look, 100% correct. And the redefinition of ideas, they've redefined freedom, they've redefined tolerance, they've redefined man and woman, they've redefined biology. You know, it's not vague concepts that the media insists on redefining, because you could have a bunch of wonks coming up with messages in Washington, but it needs the platform of the media to sort of barrage people with it 24/7, which is what's been happening. And so we've seen it, for example, we cover this all the time in obviously out of Jerusalem, the conflict going on there where somehow Israel's being accused of committing a genocide and war crimes when it's the very opposite. Israel's defending itself against genocidal attacks. And so and this is being picked up by its political opponents, which is Islamo-Marxist alliance, the jihadi progressive alliance, which the Democrats have run to their flank, to their left. And so the media just followed suit. But this redefinition of basic terms, right, wrong, good, evil, death, life, you know, Nazi or fascist versus someone who loves freedom, someone who wants us to have, you know, a freedom of expression, freedom of belief, freedom of religion, all the things that Hitler stood against, all the things that the Democrats now stand against, by the way, and the media has been helping them, but they have taken a step too far. And the fact that Bezos sees this is important.
I think, too, the question for you, Jeff, because you've been in that media world in the U.S. now handling ACLJ Jerusalem, but is this idea in these newsrooms that we know how partisan they are for the most part, maybe not the Wall Street Journal, that's about it. And of course, they're kind of limited in usually what they focus in on. But these other newspapers, I mean, it's hit piece after hit piece after hit piece, just the subject lines they come up with that are 10 times worse than if you actually read the article. But that's what we're up against as Republicans in America right now, as conservatives in America getting this close to an election. And it's also, I think, it impacts Israel, because you've got a lot on the left right now who truly, and this has become kind of mainstream. We saw it from Harris, Jeff, that, you know, would she be stronger than Donald Trump on Israel? She wouldn't answer that question. Yes.
Correct. It has direct implications on Israel. And by the way, I was at a summit in Jerusalem with people coming over from Western Europe, not regular Western European countries, mostly places like Hungary and Poland and others who are trying to fight against this as well. And we're talking with the significance that the American election has now on anti-Semitism globally, on the ability of Israel to defend itself. Look, we didn't really get a chance to talk about it today, but the Iran strike, I mean, Israel had to really maneuver a whole bunch of limitations and shackles that the administration put in as though they're an aggressor. Israel's a tiny regional country that had to extend itself through its ingenuity to fly out to another country to stop the barrage of missiles and to stop its nuclear ambitions. None of this would have happened if we had a strong pro-Israel and, more importantly, pro-America administration.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is, and Jeff talked about this, but Will, when you talk about the response from Israel to Iran, and the world will never report this as what the truth is. It was tactical and strategic. It was not to kill civilians.
That's
just
right.
What the difference is between how Iran fires missiles and how Israel fires missiles.
It's the same thing when you look at the pager attack in Lebanon, which Israel is not taking credit for, but you can kind of read the signs, or even the way that they took out the leadership of Hamas or the leadership of Hezbollah. It's all targeted. It's not meant to cause or inflict harm on the populations around them.
You know what, folks? We are launching, of course, our election hotline. That's at aclj.org/election hotline. And we start our matching challenge early because we need the resources, the money to be ready to go on any voting integrity issues, both before, during, and after the election. So double your impact today. Donate at aclj.org. If you want these elections free, fair, and protected by us, aclj.org. Donate today. Your gift will be doubled.